This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't a part of my judgment, my own sweet time didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, as always, Shane Told. So good to have you. As I record this, I am in Auckland, New Zealand, standing on my hotel balcony, looking out into the beautiful New Zealand mountains. I don't know what mountain range that is. I see some water. I see the fall leaves have turned. That's right, it's fall down here. But it's a beautiful, beautiful day. God, life is good. And you know what? I mentioned last episode about how this podcast is a worldwide thing. People listen to this all over the world, and I actually brought up New Zealand, and I did have a guy email me, say, yo, what's up? I do listen to the podcast every week. I'm from New Zealand, and I know we have Shelley from the All Access Club, but I'm very excited to be playing a show here tonight with Silverstein. We got Comeback Kid on the show. Very good. By the time you hear this, the show will be over, but hey, whatever. Next up, we're heading to Europe. We're doing 8 Warp Tour dates and more European stuff after that. So make sure you get tickets. All that stuff can be found at silversteinmusic.com. Hey, today we got a great show. The return of Telly Smith of The Word Alive, one of my very good friends in the scene, and just a good dude. They have a new record, Violent Noise. It's out now. Great record. I've really been enjoying it. And it's a record that sort of surprised me. You know, The Word Alive, they're kind of known as a heavy band, low tuning, a lot of screaming, obviously busy drums, they're known for that. But this record has great songs and some poppy stuff. So I was very excited to ask Telly about that, and we get into all kinds of other stuff. It's a great conversation. Before we get into that, shout out to our sponsor, Rockabilia.com. If you need merch, head over there. They got everything. Over 500,000 items, all officially licensed from the band. And of course, like I say every week, we got a promo code, PCJabberjaw, and you're going to save 15% off your entire order today. Whether it's a hoodie, t-shirt, mosh shorts, I don't know what you want. Maybe you live somewhere warm, you need a tank top. Believe me, at rockabilia.com, they got it. So head over there, enter promo code PCJabberjaw, and you're all set for 15% off. Let's keep the intro short this week, and let's get in to my conversation with Telly Smith of The Word Alive.
This is for every time that I fucked up. Didn't believe I was enough. Lost in my tears. And when we're older and the world gets colder, we won't give up.
Hello. What's up, buddy?
What's up, dude? How are you?
I'm good. Just on our way to Lancaster, play Chameleon Club.
It's not Lancaster, it's Lancaster.
Lancaster. You know, I have struggled so many times with city names that sometimes people, I'll be like at a show, I'll say a city's name, and they're like, it's like this. I'm like, no, it's not.
Just give up.
You're wrong.
Just give up. Well, it happens. I mean, Silverstein, in Germany, we are Silverstein. We just are at this point. Like, I might as well say it on stage. I might as well just say, Silverstein. Because that's what they call us. And we cannot just... So you just got to stop fighting it at some point.
Oh, yeah. You just be like, sure. Yes, you are absolutely correct. That is what we are called.
So Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I assume at the Chameleon Club?
Yep.
Now, what's going on with your tour? You guys were doing Killswitch dates, but they got canceled? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Our buddy Jesse had to get some vocal surgery, and so they needed to pull off kind of last minute. So we got thrown on like a hodgepodge of shows just so we weren't stuck.
You've got our new record, literally, that came out yesterday.
Yeah.
Yes, May the 4th be with you, and also happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, the combination of those 2 days are probably two of my favorite days of the year.
There you go, and a new record, Violent Noise, is out now. I had a chance to jam it over the last, they sent me an early copy, so I've been jamming it for like the last week or two. Awesome. I think it's a great record, man. I think it's got really good songs. And the thing about The Word Alive is, and you know, I've always been a champion of you guys, and I've known you personally as a friend for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think this record contains the best The Word Alive songs.
Well, thank you.
Was there more focus on songwriting this time rather than like, okay, this is a cool part or this is a cool, you know, dynamic? Because it really feels like this, the songwriting part of your band has really improved.
Yeah, I mean, I think with just like, you know, the transition of us over the years, early on, it was more so like not thinking about songs as a whole and how they translate to live and, you know, just different things. It was just like, how many cool parts can we fit into songs? Which obviously, yeah, like some fans, you know, like that obviously. But for us, like that's really never what made us love music or bands in particular. We were just kind of like a product of the environment in the time in which we became a band. So like the first couple records were, it wasn't really like, this is our vision. We didn't even have a vision, you know, yet for the band. We were just, sure, like dudes who got along, who everyone was technically proficient enough to play in a band and create something that we enjoyed enough to do it. So, you know, that's kind of a thing. Like some bands are fortunate enough to know their vision like from day one. We just weren't that band. So that's been part of the evolution of The Word Alive, is discovering what that vision is, trying to carry that out. And that vision, of course, it has grown into writing songs and not parts, which definitely was an emphasis on, you know, the last record, I think we really started pushing that, and we just grew so much from Dark Matter until Violent Noise that by the time we went into the studio, it was just a lot more natural for us to see the big picture of a song. And yeah, I think that is what makes most albums, you know, have that more timeless feel, is, you know, their songs. They're not about just that one breakdown or that one, you know, guitar riff or things. Obviously, sometimes those things become iconic, you know, within their respective scenes. But
yeah,
it's not like, you know, someone hears one riff of one song and like, man, you know what? I'm going to buy every album, every shirt. I'm never going to miss a show because that one riff was so sick. Like, it's got to be about the whole song, and it's got to be about something deeper than just, you know, this part was cool.
Well, totally. And I mean, a bunch of great songs makes a complete great album. And I mean, I was looking on your Twitter, and I've always enjoyed following you on Twitter. For people out there, if you want a good Twitter follow, get on Telly. What is it? Telly?
T-W-A? Yeah, just my name.
Just Telly Smith.
Yeah, on Twitter.
Telly Smith. And I love that you did this. You already released your top five favorite tracks on the record.
Yes.
And for me, whenever I put out a new album of my music, I always have trouble. It's like picking a favorite child, you know?
Yeah.
But one thing that I saw with all these songs you've got, just so people know, you got number one is War Evermore, I Don't Mind, Human, Lost in the Dark, Why Am I Like This? They all have great choruses. And
I mean, I'm a little biased in that regard.
But they're all big chorus songs, and I love that. That's an approach you guys have taken. Was that something? I mean, you're the singer. You sing the choruses,
mm-hmm.
And obviously Zach and Tony have a big role in the band. But working with Matt Good, who's a former guest of the show,
yeah.
How was his role in helping you guys craft these great choruses? Because I think that really jumped out at me when I heard the record.
Well, the thing about working with Matt, you know, that I love is, you know, with Dark Matter, we were kind of in a weird place where we knew that we were transitioning in different ways. We knew that we were kind of naturally gravitating towards a sonic change overall.
Yeah.
And he really helped us to navigate that. And I think by the time we got to Violent Noise, we had just done so much together that it was almost like me and him like don't even have to speak like half the time. Like I'll be in the vocal booth, I'll be like, what he'll do is usually he lets me just write, because how I like to do things is, even if it's the worst idea ever, I just need to get that out. And if I can't get that out, then I might not get to the right idea. And sometimes the first one is the best one. Sometimes it's like, wow, that was so terrible. I can't believe that just came out. Let's just forget that ever happened. but he really lets me just like go through. And when I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, like I've expressed my idea, then he'll digest it. And then we talk about it and we see, you know, how we feel about it. And he's really great at allowing me to kind of work through things. And so many times I'll be like doing something and I'll know what he's thinking before I even like finish that. Like I'll be like, nope. And, or he'll start to say something and I'll like finish his sentence. Like it's right. Literally, we are so in tune with each other when it comes to working together and writing that it's just really, really easy. And the great thing about this record is, like most of the melodies on the entire record, whether it's a chorus or verses or different things, a lot of them were very early on ideas. Like it wasn't as hard as it has been in the past. Like there wasn't as much overthinking done. We, you know, sometimes it would be like, there's a photo of us by the control desk, and how I like to write if I'm in the studio is I'll sit next to him and I'll have like my laptop there and I'll just have him like put different sections of the song on loop. I'll sit okay. there, I'll write, I'll have like a melody idea and then I'll write out lyrics, and they're not, sometimes they are, but usually they're not the final lyrics. It's just for me to get the vibe out. I want to just understand what kind of melody, like, is this going to be legato? Is this going to be a staccato melody? Is this right. something where I want it to be wordy or drawn out, for those non-singing listeners
well,
right
legato
now?
Well, legato means smooth and long, and staccato yeah. means really, like, staccato means, like, what it sounds like. Staccato.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It's very, like, da-da-da-da-da, like more choppy. Yes.
Exactly. So, you know, I'll sit there, and then I'll be like, okay, I got it. And then I'll go in the booth, and then I'll sing what I have. And he'll yeah. be like, okay. He's like, I hear that. And he's like, that's sick. He's like, let's run it a few more times, get comfortable with it. So, like, some of the songs, like, in say, for instance, in the top five, War of Amore, was a song that I wrote the day that Chester passed away. That I didn't even go into the studio with the intention of like whatever I write is going to be on the record. It was actually Matt Larson, our Monster Energy music department rep. He wrote me like early on that morning, just because he knows I'm a huge Chester and Linkin Park fan. And, you know, I was talking to him about maybe not going into the studio, and I was just like, I've never felt this way before. I've never lost, like, an icon to me. Like, right. there have been, you know, everyone in the music industry has, you know, experienced different loss. You know, some people, you know, like, Prince passing was, like, a huge, huge deal to them. Yeah. I wasn't directly influenced, you know, by him. So, like, as much as I was like, man, that's really sad, and I can understand people feeling the way they do from a compassionate standpoint, I had never felt it personally the way that I did when Chester passed. So I was just like, I don't even know if I can be in the right headspace to write right now. And he encouraged me to go into the studio, and he was like, just write for you. He was like, whatever you're feeling, he was like, go in, write for you. And he was like, whether that's something that never, you know, is heard by anybody, he's like, it doesn't matter. But, you know, he knows me pretty well, and I think he was just like, you should do this for you, just for like your own like coping of the situation. So I went in, and Matt Good, I sat down with him, and it was just me and him. And the guys had been in the studio writing different songs, different, you know, some of them were like verses, some were like choruses. War of Amore was, I think, almost finished, like the rough version of it, and yeah. Tony had written that one, and I was just going through all the demo pile basically, and I was like, just play me the songs the guys have been working on that I haven't heard yet. And I was like, I want to just write to one that just feels like how I'm feeling. And when that song came on, I was like, that one. I was like, that is the song. That's exactly how I feel inside right now. And, you know, as a singer, you know, maybe you know what that's like. You also obviously write songs and play guitar. But, yeah. You know, for me, like my favorite way to write is I like to hear the music first. And I like to feel what the music is like portraying. It's almost like listening to an instrumental band. Like it makes you feel something, only there's just no words. Well, like how I write is I want to feel that. And then I like what that feeling is.
Totally. That reminds me of a way back, way throwback to my young days. So when I was in middle school, you know, which in Canada is the seventh grade and the eighth grade. I don't know what it's like in America. And we had this really cool music teacher, and we actually used to play instruments in seventh and eighth grade, which I guess a lot of schools don't do that. So we actually had like we did band and everything. I played drums and I played bass, but I wish I'd learned like a proper instrument, you know, like I could play the trumpet or something, but but I took the easy way out, I guess. But what he used to do is we'd have these classes and he'd turn off all the lights and he would play very loudly kind of this strange music, and I wish I knew what it was, but it was, some of it was like classical, some of it was just kind of experimental music, and it never had any words, it was all just instrumental music, and he would, afterwards, he would ask us what we were, like, picturing, or what we were, you know, thinking, like, what it made us think of, or feel, and what I guess he'd been a teacher in the school for, like, 30 years, and he had done this with all of his classes. And what started happening is he realized that students they'd have the same reaction, they'd have the same thoughts, they'd have the same, like, things that they would picture in their minds from music that, like, you know, these people didn't talk to each other, that you would just pick that up just from instruments playing music.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an amazing thing. And you know, if you extrapolate that into what you're talking about, it only makes sense that that's the best approach. Is to hear this music that you're going to sing over and be like, well, what am I picturing in my mind? What am I feeling in my mind? And that should be, you know, where you get your inspiration from.
Totally. I mean, that is exactly how I, you know, prefer to do it. And it's not been every time. Like, sometimes what will happen, I mean, it's kind of the same concept, but I just, you know, put one step before the other. Sometimes I'll write, and then as I'm going through, like, my notes, I'll be like, this thing that I wrote like a year ago fits perfectly with this. But it doesn't always work out like that. And more times than not, I'd say like 80% of the time or more, I just end up writing something completely new, you know, from that. So that was War Evermore for me, was like, it just came out of me. And same with like, I Don't Mind, that song, me, Zach and Matt Good wrote, and like, I'm not kidding, like from the first riff to like all the vocals, music, like not every single layer of the music by any means, but like the song lyrically, musically was there in like an hour and 20 minutes, maybe something like that. And it was just so much fun. Like I had the most fun out of all the songs in the record tracking that one vocally. Cause it's just so upbeat. And I felt like every melody I did was catchy, and I was just like, I don't know what it is. Like, I feel like we're just super in sync right now with each other, and everyone, like Zach would do something and I'd be like, yeah, that's it. That's fucking sick. And then, I would go and do like a vocal part and I'm like, what do you guys think? They're like, yeah, that's it. Like, that's just the one. Like, so like some songs came together like that. And, some of my favorite songs out of that top five, were actually some of the faster songs that were tracked. And just going back to the original question, Matt Good, like the way he is he'll let me go through. And then if it's not the one, he'll be like, he always has an idea too, because he's, you know, a singer songwriter. And so sometimes he'll be like, what about this? And then I'll either take it, you know, note for note, which actually happened in Stare at the Sun and Real Life. He actually wrote the melodies a bunch of the lyrics for both of those choruses.
Well, it's funny, you know, you talk about Chester, and I know that was heartbreaking for you, and in some ways inspiring, I guess, you know, talking about that. But, you know, I read somewhere that you you know, kind of the death of Chester, you know, meant a lot to you, and that it inspired one of the songs, but I didn't know which one, because I don't know, I just didn't know which one, and I thought it might be Real Life, because to me, Real Life sounds the most like a Linkin Park song.
Oh, it definitely does, yeah. I mean, we, like, there's no denying that, I think it's Breaking the Habit, it's just that constant, just like,
right, the
whole
beat and
song.
The drums are like a little electronic sounding. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were like, we straight up were like, that was like, I think that was pretty much the only song. Well, Lonely, we were just like, we want to write kind of like a Deftones-y, like vibey, dark, heavy song. But Real Life was probably the only other one that we were just like, we've never had a song that's just the same beat pretty much through the whole song, and we were like, we thought that would be really cool to do. So that's how that song came about. And that song was written and recorded before Chester passed.
Oh, interesting.
It just kind of like came about like that. But I definitely could see that one, because you know, especially I didn't know, you know, the place he was in. I mean, no one did, obviously. But Real Life is like the transition from maybe you used to actually get high off different vices, and then you learn to, you know, shake that and kind of feel that like natural high from just like living your life to the fullest, kind of a thing.
Right.
And so like it is more of a like the darkness was there at one point in your life, but now like life is just fucking awesome, and it's electrifying. It feels like you're, you know, quote unquote, when people say like, I'm living my best life, like basically that's like Real Life is like that moment where you're just like, man, life is really dope right now.
Great. Well, I mean, I know you've had some personal struggles, you know, just as a friend of yours, you know, I know you've, you know, you were in a relationship for a long time that came to an end. And, you know, we went to South America together kind of right as you were reeling from that. That must have played a role, you know, in the writing and recording of this record. And how are you holding up now?
I mean, it definitely did. It's just been a long couple of years, you know, with different things, a lot of change, you know, like you said, going from, you know, being with my girlfriend of over 6 years and living together pretty much the entire time. Just the things that we experienced together, like it's undoubtedly like a gigantic chapter of my life. And you know, we still like love each other, care about each other. I would like to think we always will. And you know, so there's no songs on the record like about her or anti her. It just, you know, it wasn't working, and just some of the other things that I had gone through and some of the things she had gone through, the reality of life is sometimes it's just really hard to stay growing together, especially when you're experiencing so many things so far apart from each other, and my perspectives and her perspectives were just completely different, and there's nothing wrong with that. If anything, it's just sad, you know, because she's a great person, and I, you know, have been a great person off and on throughout time. So
you've had moments of brilliance, in the great dude front.
You know, I've definitely been good and I've been bad. That's for sure.
Well, I appreciate the honesty. I mean, you know, I think most people can relate to that as well.
You know, okay. The older I get, you know, I just am a little bit more honest with myself and people around me, and that. Sometimes, yeah, I've been a shitty human being, and I try not to be, but, you know, just sometimes you make bad choices, and those bad choices lead to other ones, and, you know, it can be a slippery slope, but thankfully, more times than not, now, I think I'm making, like, better choices overall. But, I mean, the record just, it kind of came from a place of, I was transitioning, going through a lot of different things, some stuff that I was, you know, not admitting was going on, some things I was in denial about, some things that I was blatantly just like running away from, hoping that things just naturally got better. And a lot of that came out almost like subconsciously, obnoxiously serious, you know, on the record. And I think, you know, I could write like five more albums worth of things that have happened even since we wrote the record. But, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes. And I think this record, like writing it, was what I needed to do to let myself start to actually dance with myself. And, you know, through doing that, it's been, you know, kind of hit rock bottom towards the end of the year, but then it turned the corner, and it was just like a lot of people have, you know, experienced, I think, in the music industry. It's just such a roller coaster, and, yeah, you know, all these things are finally coming out about, you know, the way that our lives are dictated by so many things out of our control. It's, you know, it can be really daunting for people who like myself, like one or more, like wear your heart in your sleeve, like kind of get burned, you know, a lot in life. You know, doing that, missing family, friends, things like that, it just weighs on you, but you're just trying to always be positive because you don't want to bring the rest of your band down or your crew or the other, you know, people that are, you know, behind the scenes working for your band, trying to help you have a career. It's like, you don't want to be the one that's like letting your personal shit like bring down everyone else. So everyone just tries to like put a smile on all the time, and
right,
it's just not sustainable. And so, you know, because of, you know, some of the things I've gone through and just us getting older, being a band, we will have been a band for 10 years, later this year.
Yeah. Congratulations on that milestone.
Yeah. I'm stoked. It definitely went by pretty quick. But it's just like, we're just like in a different place now where we can just be honest with ourselves and each other. And it's been helpful to kind of just like, you know, we've been doing things like on this tour, off days have been going like bowling together and going to like barcades and doing different things instead of just only going to bars just to drink. And it's been pretty rad because it makes it not so isolating, you know, as it can get sometimes on tour.
Totally. Totally. Well, yes, 10 years. Wow. And this is album number 5, which is pretty crazy too. And I read one thing on your Twitter that I found kind of interesting. And you were talking about how you've done more press, you know, than you've ever done, you know, in the last little while, I guess, to set up this album. And it's funny because I read that and then I'm like, wait a second, am I press? I guess I'm press too. Like, I'm press now. I don't feel like I'm press, but I guess I am.
No, I mean, technically, but not to me.
But I'm wondering,
no,
you know, you said...
I was looking forward to this one.
Well, thank you. And I am too. But you said, you know, you said you were disappointed with the press. And I kind of wondered why and what you meant by that. Because I don't know. I just wondered what, you know, the expectations are for you as an artist. If it's like, okay, we've been a band for 10 years, we're on album number 5, like, I need a little more respect here, or if it's just that people are trying to pull negativity out of you and you're trying to be positive. I'm just kind of wondering what you meant by that.
Yeah, I think for me it's more it's not the respect, because, you know, people are, they aren't, I'm not too concerned with that, but it's more for me of like trying to pull out something that isn't there. You know, I'll talk about anything, good or bad. I don't, you know, have a problem with that. I think, you know, I listened to your podcast early on in this tour with my buddy Scott Russo from Unwritten Law.
What a great episode that was.
Yeah, it was a great one. And I was talking to him, like I wrote him afterwards and we talked for a little bit and we just talked about how like, there's no point in like sugarcoating things like, you know, this far in. And it's like, it's just so much easier to just be no bullshit and just tell it how it is. So I'm totally open to that. And, you know, I don't have particularly too much to hide, necessarily, but, it's just like frustrating when certain things, like for instance, we've obviously had member changes too recently with Luke and Daniel. And, yeah, you know, a lot of the articles, like they'll talk to me about things and that might be a small piece of like what we talk about. And then that'll be like the lead headline for the article.
Right.
You know, Telly Smith says the band is only Tony and Zach, and I'm like, no, that's not what I've ever said, and that's not what I mean by it. I'm coming from a place of I'm thankful that the core of the band is still there, and that the reality of the fact is that, not in a disrespectful way to any member, but me, Tony, or Zach have just written almost every song, and we haven't written every song, we haven't written every part. It doesn't mean that people haven't had impact or influence, but you know, people just like taking that and trying to twist it into something that it's just not real is has been a little like frustrating. But I went to a pour your own beer and wine bar last night, and I had a couple glasses of some great red wine. So I was also feeling a little feisty.
And, there's the honesty. I love it.
Some of my best tweets are post bar tweets. So last night was, I just, you know, had to get it out there. But it was one of those things. I saw like a headline of that, and then another one was, someone took me talking about Chester and War Evermore, and they made the headline, Telly Smith talks like friendship with Chester, which I've never claimed to have a friendship with him. I've never met Chester. He was just a huge impact to me, but they only put that there just to get extra clicks, you know, and just stuff like that is just, I think that's just like shoddy journalism. I think it's just kind of manipulative to people, and it paint if I come across as an asshole and that's just how it is, that's totally fine. But if I'm not being that way and you know, paint me out to be that, then I'm obviously going to be offended, you know, by it. And you know, because I know Luke and Daniel or any past members, you know, everyone sees everything. So you know, it's just frustrating because you know, Luke in particular is still like a really close friend of mine. He just moved to LA. I was just hanging out with him right before I left for this tour. And and Daniel has his studio and is killing it. And we've been supportive of him doing that. And we actually ran into each other at he was at a wedding in Vegas and I was at a wedding in Vegas this past September, and ran into him randomly in a casino. And so it's just like random stuff like that. Is like, there is no like crazy like drama or anything. And if there were, like, I, you know, would talk about it you know, if I needed to. But we're also just like, don't need to air dirty laundry just for the sake of like building a story. It's like, that's not why I'm in a band. It's not why, you know, the story about like this album. And so like doing press, being excited, you know, like if you're excited about an album, it's like, you want to talk about the album and talk about your journey. And then people are just like, well, this one thing that has nothing to do with like the actual songs themselves, let's talk about that. And so
well, that's one thing that I love about podcast and you know, and the format that I'm a part of here is the long form podcast. We can talk about anything, and I do very little editing, and I don't really cut out a lot. You know, and that way people can get out their whole side of the story. You know, I understand it must be difficult when you talk to somebody for 20 minutes and you're really only writing like a tiny 2-3 paragraph article. You know, that must be difficult for a journalist too. You know, but I think that's funny. You know, the hardest thing for me is I go to all this trouble. I do, you know, I find the guest, I schedule the guest, I talk to them, you know, we find a time that works. Then I dump the files in my computer and I edit it, and you know, and I go through and I record my intro and I record my outro, and then I find the appropriate music and I put the music in, and then I do the graphics and the artwork, and then I'm about to upload the podcast, and then there's the description box where I have to describe what the episode's about. And that to me is the hardest part. I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, we talked for an hour. I don't know. We talked about all kinds of shit. And I'm like, well, I guess I want to have something like intriguing, so when I post it on social media, someone's like, oh, cool, I'll check it out. But I'm the worst at that part.
Yeah, but that's like, it's different to like try to, you know, sum up what it's about. And it would be different if you included something that just straight up wasn't there. Or said, you know, if something was said and it's a pop out moment, like, sure. Yeah. I'm, you know, I click on things for that same reason. I'm like, oh, I'm interested in that. But if there's something that just is not there, then I'm just like, I don't know what you were thinking right there, because that actually was never said. And then you read the article or listen to the podcast, and you're like waiting for that, and it just never happens. And then you're like, well, what? Okay, did it get edited out? You know, and so I think, you know, I don't know what this conversation's, you know, buzzwords will be, but feel free to use whatever ones you want.
can you say something about Bring Me the Horizon really quick? Let me drop
a few things real quick.
Yeah.
Okay, so Bring Me used to be, in my opinion, no offense, but a shitty deathcore band.
Okay, here we go. This is good. Yes.
Yeah. And then they transitioned into this, like, literally transcendent rock band that I fucking love. I bought their last two records. I sing along to it.
You've collaborated with Ollie Sykes. Can I put that in the headline?
Me and Ollie have something in the works. He doesn't know about it yet, but we've got some big plans.
Right. Here we go. That I got the title. It'll be Telly Smith of the Word Alive. I'll spell your name wrong. Telly Smith of the Word Alive talks collab with Bring Me the Horizon's Ollie Sykes. That can be the title of the podcast.
You want to hear an actual collaboration that has been talked about that would be really funny that got the approval? So me and Connor Ball from the Vamps, we talked about doing a Slipknot cover together. And then Corey Taylor like saw the tweets and chimed in, and he was like, I am very interested to hear what this would be. And we like did this thing on Twitter where we asked people what song, you know, would be sick. And cause he's actually a really good singer and talented, musician, outside of his, you know, kind of pop boy band. I don't know what you would call them. I guess that's
right.
What it is, but
sure.
Cool dude. He started coming out to the Word Alive shows, like, I don't know, like 5 years ago in Europe. UK. And we just became friends over the years, and so that's actually a thing that me and him are trying to find some time to do something, which will be cool. I don't know what some other buzz things going on.
What are your thoughts on Cardi B?
Cardi B is so fucking badass.
I love
Cardi B.
I think there's too much positivity here. We need some negativity, you know?
Okay, so
that's
negativity.
What sells copies
Let's
of
see.
My magazine. I mean, podcast.
Negativity. Let me try to find. Hey guys, what is there anything that I talk shit on? Vince doesn't count. No, Vince, you don't count.
Oh, is Vince there? Say what's up to Vince for me.
Shane says what's up. He said what's up, Shane. Let's see. I got one for you. This is going to be slightly controversial, maybe.
We're reaching so hard. This is great.
No, this isn't actually reaching. I talked about this. So you guys are on the last Warped Tour this summer. We're not on it. I would love to be on it. I think we should be on it. Every year we've done it, we've, you know, grown and done, you know, better and better. I think we, you know, are kind of like a warped band in mm-hmm. some ways. That being said,
yeah, you guys have pretty much done the even years and we've done the odd years.
Yeah. And, which is, you know, is just bullshit because we would have had so many back outside the trailer hangs, across the summers. You know, the thing is, like, I love Kevin Lyman. Without him, you know, we would not probably be in certain situations that we've, had the best opportunities in our life. But the way that it went, I'm actually not surprised at all that Warped is done. You know, kind of had to go away, not by choice, but by just the lack of, you know, people coming out to it. I think it, not necessarily overall musically speaking, but I think there's a lot of bands that you look at these different festivals that are growing right now and killing it, and there's just less bands. There's less bands, there's more quality over quantity. There's just like something that pulls the bands themselves in. Like every band wants to do, you know, Rock on the Range or Carolina Rebellion or, you know, any of these big, you know, Danny Wimmer festivals. And I think it's the band experience is great. And then when every band is stoked and it's one day or it's, you know, a string of festivals, no one's burnt out. I think Warped Tour put on too many soft ass bands. People complaining about the heat, people complaining about, oh, we're not getting this, not getting that. Instead of like focusing on the bands that love Warped Tour, that kill it on Warped Tour, that, you know, bring in crowds, that, you know, make people excited to be on Warped Tour. I think there's just a lot of like unknown things and question mark bands that you take those out, take off a few stages, take off 20 bands and put that money, however, you know, it's gotta be hundreds of thousands of dollars, mm-hmm. maybe even over $1 million, put that into even one band, like, or a couple like really big bands that are like hold that essence of Warped Tour, that put on great live shows, that aren't just doing it for, you know, the paycheck. And I think had that happened, I don't know that Warped Tour would be ending right now. I think right. it would have gone beyond where it is. And I'm very like stoked. I'm a fan of Warped Tour. I just think, you know, from doing it over the years, all the bands were just like, yeah, we're getting paid this and it's Warped Tour, so why the fuck not? But they just complain. They're just not about it. And I think right. I think Kevin probably got taken advantage of, and, you know, different bands took it for granted. And I think that's just a huge problem that's been in our scene in general, is there's just no like diehard fans. I mean, there are, but there just aren't, you know, like we were just in South America, like those kind of fans, like,
yeah. Know, wild.
How often do you like experience shows like that in the States? It's like you have like great shows for the States, but everything's like its own, like, you know, there's different levels of bars to be set within different areas. And the States is honestly one of the lower bars. Mm-hmm. It's just how it is. And I think that whole problem, way too many bands, it's like quality over quantity is just so much more important to me. And I just wish the bands that like busted their ass, that are hardworking, you know, guys and girls doing it for the right reasons, I wish there had been more of those getting opportunities and not these, right. you know, pat on the back favors for managers and booking agents and labels. You know, make bands earn it like they used to.
I just think there isn't that anymore. You guys have proven yourselves, you know, as a, you know, five albums, and you guys have done Warped Tour numerous times, and you have a new album that is out right now. It would only make sense for you guys to be doing at least some of the Warped Tour dates. So for you guys to get passed over, I guess that pisses you off.
Yeah, it makes me probably sound like bitter or like ungrateful or something like that. But it's not so much that. It's just like when you know, like I've talked to Kevin so many times and played cornhole with him, and when you know, I had a death in the family, he was one of the first people that was like, whatever you guys need, if you want to go home for a couple of days, like he was like, we're not gonna like cut you or cut, you know, the guarantee of the band, just like whatever you need. Like he is a great person who does so much for so many people, and all the things he does that people don't even know about, like just helping different musicians getting into rehab programs, getting, you know, mental health, getting you know, hospital bills taken care of. Like he just has done so many things. It's just kind of disheartening for me being older and seeing what actually like goes on behind the scenes. Like there's just certain bands that I just feel like shouldn't be, you know, given that opportunity. Even if we're not, there's still other bands that are, you know, even more deserving than we are that probably should be on. So it's just, you know, it's just being older and privy to more of the reality behind the scenes right. and the industry and the scene, and just seeing how it works, the different managers just and booking agents, labels, just, you know, getting the favors and not bands earning it anymore.
Well, you know what? Maybe they just can't handle the rock, you know, and also the potential liability of Telly Smith doing something stupid and hurting himself or hurting somebody else in the crowd.
Because I remember... That reminds me.
What?
Oh, that reminds me. We almost couldn't play Warped Tour 2016 because I almost couldn't get insured.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? And I don't know if this is a factor at all. I really, really don't think that it is. Maybe it is. But, I mean, the last time we spoke on the podcast, you know, you had, it was in Pomona, California, I think. You jumped in the crowd and you hurt yourself, fucked
broke
up really
my
bad.
Back.
Broke your back, yeah. And it happened again.
Yeah, well, it was different the second time. So the second time when I broke my leg, I compound fractured my right leg and broke my knee and partially tore my meniscus in L.A., actually, at the Novo. I went.
Get away from Southern California. Stay away.
I know. I just broke the streak. This is the first show where I haven't broke something in like 3 years. So I think the curse is lifted. But so, you know, I promise, like, the guys, I'm not going to be jumping off balconies, not going to stage dive anymore. I was like, all I'm going to do ever is just go into the balconies sometimes, you know, like pull a Jared Leto, like run around with my wireless mic and go like pop up somewhere random. So we're playing on the I Prevail tour, Rage on the Stage. The floor seats had sold out, so some of our fans have got balcony seats.
Yeah.
There's this one dude in like the dead center, just losing his mind our whole set. And I was like, you know what? I can probably make it up there. There's like a long enough break in the bridge of Trapped that I was like, I'm going to go up to the balcony. So I run up there. I went too high, though, and I realized where he was. So I was like, okay, if I don't jump down like over the railing on to this walkway, I won't be able to make it to him before the song's over. So I'm like stepping on these chairs and then go to jump over a railing. And I basically like misstepped with my right leg and fell, hit the railing, fell over the railing, caught my leg in between two steel beams, and like it snapped my leg. And then I tried to walk over to him and fell to the ground. And I'm like, there's a video of me, like, he's like trying to sing. It's so funny. He's trying to sing along, but also is like freaking out, going back and forth of like wants to help me, but also is like, I'm still trying to sing the rest of the song and finish it.
God.
And so he's like half fan, half like concerned, like, and he just doesn't know what to do. And I'm like, it get done. I'm like, all right, We Are the Word Alive. And then I roll over and I'm like, I think I broke my leg. And then they wheeled me out.
Wow. Yeah. And then you did finish the rest of the tour sitting down. Did you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. I finished sitting down. I actually made bus call that night. And, you know, I don't know why I do the things I do to myself, but, yeah, I stayed on the tour and did the rest of it. It was very awkward, but
yeah, that's tough, especially with, you know, supporting a band like I Prevail and, you know, they're friends of the show, and they've done, some amazing things and they have such young, impressionable fans.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been hard. Like, did you have to explain every night? Hi. Yeah. My leg's broken, or I'd be like rocking out harder. Like that's a hard thing to kind of convey to people that haven't seen your band before.
Well, what ended up happening is I just guilt tripped like the whole crowd. I would be like, I would tell them, like, you know, like before the third song, I think it was, I would stop every night and be like, okay, obviously I'm sitting down. This is really fucking weird. No, this is not like our gimmick. I'm not just like a weird singer that likes to sit down to sing.
Right.
I broke my leg and I was like, so the thing is I can't do shit. But I was like, so if you have two working legs, you have no excuse. And
right.
I mean, it worked. Like, everyone pretty much went crazy every night.
There you go.
So it was just weird for me because obviously I love to run around and get into the songs and the moment. So it was just weird for me. But
I can imagine personally, like, it's, that would be very tough for what you're used to.
Yeah. No adrenaline rush whatsoever.
No. Well, dude, thank you for doing this. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. You know, a lot of people are always interested in the music business side of things. And, you know, it being 2018 and this being your fifth record and your first record came out in 2010, the differences in the way that you promote and sell music, how much have you seen the changes and like, what's your approach with this, like, from the music business side of things?
Man, it is a whole different world now than, you know, when we were putting out Deceiver.
Right. And that came out in 2010, like, right?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
you know, even like going from real to dark matter, it was like starting to transition. But like from like 2014 till now, like it has changed so much. I mean, we are for the first time, like our retail, like, you know, we would sell however many thousands of copies, you know, first week, like get pushed through retail. Well, now like our retail is like almost non-existent outside of vinyl, because Best Buy is going to stop selling in July. Target has like their minimums requirements of physical copies from the last record to do Target, which we didn't, which we weren't at.
Oh, that's how they do it? They do it based on your last record sales that they had?
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's at least most of the time. Obviously, there's some that people get favors pulled and get stuff in that they feel could like blow up. But, you know, we're kind of not in that. We're not a new band that has that. So, but yeah, so it's like mostly vinyl, you know, now. And we have some like retail here and there, and record stores that we've done well in, or, you know, cities that we do sell higher numbers of CDs. But for the most part, it's streaming, and it's, you know, I've accepted it fully. I mean, I pay for Apple Music and Spotify myself.
Do you have both of them?
Yeah, I have both of them. I prefer Spotify. I almost never use Apple Music. Only if like certain friends, bands will drop like, you know, Apple Music exclusive or something like that, or a band I like, I'll go check it out. But that's literally the only reason I even have it.
Yeah.
I listen to Spotify every single day though. And so I totally understand, why people love it. And for us, it's more about just like, hey, if these songs are good, people are going to listen, they're going to talk about it, they're going to find it. And all I care about is fans coming to shows. Like, I'm, you know, it's been almost 10 years since, you know, bands were making substantial money off CD sales anyways. So it's like, that's already been gone. Now we can stop pretending like first week numbers matter, which is great in some ways.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, is the album good? Are the songs good? Do they connect with people? If they do, come see us live. If you love us live and you want to, you know, help us to continue to do this, you know, buy merch and, and then keep coming back. Like, that's literally it. That's all I care about is, do you like the songs? Do they mean something to you? Do they mean enough that you want to come see us live? I think we are a better live band than we can ever translate onto a record. Just because of the energy, like, you just can't capture that. Same with you guys. I think you guys are better live than you are in record. Not that it's bad, but those are my favorite bands. You know,
sure.
I think Deftones is that band that even when Chino's not note for note perfect, I don't give a shit about that. Like, Thursday is one of those bands that, you know, earlier on, Jeff's gotten way better. And he's, you know, killing it right now. But one of my first shows seeing Thursday, he actually sang not very good. And, but I loved it. I didn't care about that. I care about the passion, the energy, like the connection, like that live, like feel, like getting sweaty, bouncing off of other people in the crowd. Like, that's what I loved about music and going to shows. And that's what I still love. And so that's the environment I try to create, is the same reason that I wanted to be in a band is the kind of frontman I try to be live. And so the music industry can change all at once. If you write good songs and, you know, you're genuine human beings that give a shit about your fans, I think you're going to be all right through whatever this transition is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No. And it was cool too, that you guys didn't do like a super long lead out, to the record.
Yeah,
like
the shortest one.
It was very short, like less than 2 months, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was 6 weeks.
Yeah. 6 weeks, which is like,
and it was almost going to be less.
Yeah.
We almost just did a month, but we just had a little too much stuff going on. And then one music video got pushed back. So we had to do 6 weeks just to physically get everything in before the album came out.
No, and I think that that's something that's going to happen more and more. You know, like even bands in our genre, like my good friends in the Cancer Bats, they just dropped a record with just like a surprise record. Here it is. You
know,
so that's something that I think is going to happen more and more in our scene, and I welcome it because I hate it. And as a singer of a band, as a musician, I hate it too. You know,
oh,
like,
totally.
Like, oh, here's the record. Okay, well, three and a half months later, here it is. You know, so I kudos on that.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think the whole spontaneity of shortening things, and I actually hope it leads to potentially shorter cycles and maybe not even full length records. I wouldn't mind doing an EP once a year rather than a full length and doing a 2 year album cycle. I just think so much changes within 2 years. It's kind of hard to really like mold something that came out 2 years ago, you know, 2 years later. I love making music. If I could put out a song a month, I would prefer that. I don't know if music will necessarily go in that direction, but just as someone who loves to create, I welcome the shorter the better. Just drop stuff on me, let me freak out about it, let me talk about it, and because I mean sometimes like bands will drop stuff and then I'll be like you said, months later, and be like, oh yeah, I forgot, like they have a new record, they put a song out, like I forgot about that song already, like
right.
It's just, you know, I think that's counterproductive.
Yeah, I'm with you up to a point. You know, I think that'd be great if my favorite band dropped a single a month, that'd be cool. But at the same time, like for me, I'm an album guy. Maybe it's just because I grew up that way, and it's like, sure, like maybe you can have I'm just trying to think of an example. Like, okay, you might have like a real good piece of fried chicken. Okay, that's good. But like, if I'm eating a piece of fried chicken, and I'm a vegetarian, by the way, but I want to have like I want that side of gravy with it, and I want that coleslaw,
totally.
And I want that macaroni salad, and you know what I mean. Mm. And I want that cornbread. Like for
Making
me, like
me
that's an album. I need like all of the things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I'm just getting nothing but like a what do they have at KFC these days? I don't even know. But, you know, just the side, like that's not enough for me. I need the whole thing. So that's,
totally.
I'm an album guy in that respect. But I totally get, you know, the idea of dropping music more frequently. And I love EPs.
Well,
speaking
to that, I mean, I am too. I still buy albums. I buy albums all the time. I like, whether it's vinyl or like I'll like go online, even though you don't have to, buy a record, or if I see something in stores that I want, I'll buy it. But you know, maybe it's more like single a month, and then at the end of the year you can get that album and listen to like that.
Because
I do like having that, you know, like for me, like I tell people with Violent Noise in particular, I'm like, listen to this album front to back, like listen to the roller coaster of energy, emotion, the lyrical content, the way songs flow, like there's a reason for it.
Totally.
So I totally love when people do that. The reality is, you know, you get a Spotify playlist of one song and then people are listening to a single, mm-hmm. single. So I also understand that there is a whole new generation that they just want to consume, but they don't want to consume a whole album. Otherwise, people would still be buying records. They just want what they want in a nice, neat playlist, and that's it. And so I think something of the best of both worlds will probably end up happening, but I love it. I still love records, too.
Totally. Well, Violent Noise is out now, and
it is
a great record. A lot of great songs, as we talked about, a lot of great choruses, and it is a very dynamic record. So, yeah, make sure you check out the whole thing, because there's songs that are pretty poppy and then songs that are pretty heavy. So I think, you know, just the single is not going to get the whole vibe. So
totally.
Dude, well, anything else to add? Thanks for your taking the time, and it's really good to talk to you.
Yeah, no, you know, we're enjoying life on the road right now, and always appreciate being on. Round two is great, and hopefully
and
the boys are doing well.
We're doing great, man.
Awesome. Well, dude. I mean, I will see you on Warp Tour when I come and hang. So
can't wait for the hangs behind the trailer.
Yeah,
we'll shotgun a couple Bud Lights, man. We'll do it right.
I'm down.
All right, Telly. Have a great show in Lancaster, and we'll talk soon, man.
All right, take care.
Cheers, dude. So there it is with Telly Smith of The Word Alive, back for round two. Always great to have him. Thank you, Telly, for doing this, and thank you for listening to this.
If you want to get in touch, it's very easy. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. If you've got suggestions for future guests, if you want to tell me a story, really, it's all good. Send me an email, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Make sure you check us out on Facebook. Our Facebook page is lit, so I've been told. And of course, we're on Instagram and Twitter and all that stuff as well. Are you sad this episode is over? Are you sad you have to wait a whole week for another one? If you are, maybe you should join the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. For as little as $6 a month, you can get all access to bonus episodes, more interaction with me and other fans of the show on our Facebook page, a question and answer session every month, and of course, merch sent directly to your door. So check it out. It is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. And shout out to all my sinners worldwide. I've met so many of them in Australia on this run. A lot of sinners in Australia. Shout out to Rainer and Gabby and Andre and Feek and Laura and Taylor and Sophie and Jesse and Jacob. And I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, but I love you all so much. So yes, everybody, check out the All Access Club. It's super rad. Also, feel free to go on iTunes and write a review, preferably 5 stars. That really helps us out as well. And tell a friend, tell a loved one. Let's keep this thing growing. I'll be back next week with an all-new episode, and as always, I will leave you with a tune. Here's a new one from The Word Alive. It's called Why Am I Like This? On Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love, and we'll see you next week.
No, this feels